Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That, friends, was master of mirth and inveterate storyteller Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. Together we, the Brieflies, strive with dogged determination to keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing to you every week another episode of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. We also strive to follow Brian's mantra of less is more. More or less. I also want to welcome you, listeners, to the post-Hanukkah, pre-Christmas show of the Brown Briefly, where we will be entertained by our guest, Mario Threisingham. But first, let's just go around the table and let you know who's here today. Engineering the show from behind the board at the Voice of Vachon's Jean Brosh Broadcast Studio in bustling, bodacious downtown Vachon, flight instructor, recently re-elected Vachon Airport Commissioner, Voice of Vachon board member, West Texas Roughneck, Eastern Montana band member, former Army Intelligence Specialist, and treetop flyers list gets longer and longer. Truman O'Brien, good morning, Truman.
Okay, thanks for listening, folks. This has been the Brown Briefly. Oh, no, sorry. I mean, these things are getting so long, I thought we're going to get to the end of the show, you know. But thanks. Yeah, I'm here. Thanks.
Absolutely. Sitting next to Truman with an equally impressive resume, enough past work experiences to fill several of our shows, Craig Bellis, former tow truck repo man, Teamster, apprentice auto mechanic, Pinker.
Oh, you froze. You froze. Oh, no.
Right in the middle of
right
my resume.
Right in the middle of your introduction. What can we say? There he is.
And I catch my breath now. Craig Bellis. Good morning. How are you doing, Craig?
I'm good. We lost you there. So my resume dropped off, which was just fine. Thank you.
I can go again.
No.
That's quite all right.
Okay. Well, and now also zooming in from his home in historic, from his home is historian extraordinaire, owner, operator, skipper of the Vachona, president of Vachon's own and soon to be new and improved Heritage Museum, all while planning yet another southern hemispheric sojourn, our globe-trotting guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman. In true Aussie fashion, how you going, Bruce?
Oh, you're muted, Bruce. You're muted.
Oh, not going so good right now yet. There we go.
I'm already in the southern hemisphere. It's going well, and it is historic Ellisport, so you can take that for what it's worth, right?
Okay, wonderful, Bruce, to have you here with all of the Brieflies. Let's extend a hearty welcome to our small talk guest today, Mariel Threisingham. Mariel is an environmental law and policy specialist with previous experience in human rights education and rule of law strengthening in Central America, Central and Southeast Asia, Eastern Europe, and West Africa, in addition to her equity and environmental contributions through her work with Front and Centered. Mariel has also served on the Vachon School Board since moving to Vachon with her husband and family, which will soon include three children. It's great you could join us today, Mariel.
Thank you. Thanks for the welcome.
Absolutely. We look forward to talking with you today about some exciting things that you are working on for the legislative session. But lest you forgot, dear listener, mine is the voice of indivisible. I have trouble with that too. Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group. Certainly much more satisfied these last several years, but still striving to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate.
You know, when you introduce yourself, Kevin, you don't have to say
that word.
I'll take that under consideration. Thank you so much. We're always continuous process improvement is what we strive for at the Briefly today. So thank you. Hey, but our usual practice, reverting back to old recipes for entertaining our audience. Let's take a moment to check in with everybody about what special things you experienced this past week. Bruce, maybe we could start with you.
Sure. This is always an interesting week because it's the week of the solstice, but it's also the week of the highest tides of the year. The king tides come right around the solstice. You have another set of king tides that come in June, but these are higher. So these high tides, the next couple of days are right at the 13 foot level. And so living above KVI Beach and watching the beach disappear every morning and then reappear. And of course, with king tides, you get very high tides, but you also get very low tides at the same time. So it's always an interesting week to watch and see how much climate change and sea level rise is affecting KVI Beach as it each year a little bit more disappears at the height of the king tides. And so I'm waiting for the day we will no longer have KVI Beach, sad as that may be. But, so that's been my week.
Okay, KVI maybe in the future known to be also Washaway Beach.
It could be.
Craig, how has your week been?
Week was great. It was filled with holiday get-togethers, people inviting us over for festive good times and great meals and tremendous conversations and lots of laughter. So, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. We punctuate that, though, with having our floors redone at the same time. We have lots of noise and dust and issues with trying to get the floor to match, but all is good. Those are truly first world problems. So,
all right, fantastic. Well, you might just nudge Truman to your right. I see you're there in both festive orange, holiday orange today.
Well, actually, they're red, quite red.
I think it's
red.
Not coming across on the
screen.
No,
we're quite red today.
Yeah. We've got some color rendition challenges
there
here.
There you go.
But Truman, how's things going with you?
Well, 3 weeks are on our show 3 weeks ago, our morning scramble show 3 weeks ago, we had the great, great honor of interviewing Alan Fitzpatrick, who is an amazing actor from Seattle. He's had a career on Broadway. He's done, I think he's performed at every theater in the Seattle area. And he has written a play from Dickens' A Christmas Carol. And he reads from the book, but he actually does all of the parts. He's a one-man show, and he performed at VCA over the weekend. Did two shows, a matinee and an evening performance. And I'm telling you, it was fantastic. It helps, of course, know the story, but man, the guy just did a beautiful job. He had sound effects. He had a screen behind him that showed pictures. And anyway, wonderful, wonderful performance. I'm really sorry that you folks missed it because it was great. Just great.
Nice. Sounds awesome. Marielle, what would you like to share with us about how things are going with you lately?
Well, what we're doing right now is sort of small talk, everyone share something interesting. You know how for anyone who's done remote work or is doing it, a lot of meetings will just kick off with an icebreaker. Oh, let's just chat a little bit, kind of warm up like we're doing now. And I was in a meeting yesterday, and the kickoff icebreaker question was, what made you laugh in the last few days? Just give us something that made you laugh, which I loved it.
It's a great one.
And then almost everyone shared something about an animal or a child. And so mine was my 15-month-old has really gotten into this game where he'll take a hold of your hand, and he'll lift up the hand to sort of cover his face or lift up the joined hands, and then he'll pop his head up over them. And it's his form of peekaboo, I guess. Yeah. We never did this with him. He's like, oh, it gives him the biggest kick. And then you can't help but laugh.
No, of course, yeah.
And that's just amazing. Thinking about it brings a big smile to my face. Oh, so
sure.
Even Craig mentioned all the laughter in the holiday parties. I was like, what was at the heart of the laughter? And I mean, sometimes it's just being amongst loved ones and that really great energy. It doesn't have to be, a particular joke, but yeah,
that's right.
I hope everyone finds lots of reasons to laugh.
Very good. Very good.
If I may interject for a second, Kevin,
Please.
Justice Roberts this morning during the funeral of Justice Sanders.
Sandra Day O'Connor.
Good Lord. Yeah. Commented about how the court was one big happy family. It was a happy family full of, made up entirely of in-laws, but it was a happy family. And you made me think of that, Muriel, when you mentioned laughter with family.
Yeah.
I can just imagine. That actually got a big laugh
in the
cathedral in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, following that theme, Mariel, I have to say our listeners have heard about our Douglas squirrel who comes by now. We're training it to pay attention to us because we throw peanuts out on the deck every so often. But it seems to now get into the idea that the faster it runs around on the deck, the more food it's going to get. So it's hard to know what's going on in the squirrel's mind, but it does still get fed and it shows up and they're adorable, of course.
Well, you mentioned that I'm here to entertain listeners, so maybe I need to talk really, really fast to get more laughs and spread the entertainment value.
That's right.
Well, I have to say that I happily was able to get out twice on the bicycle to this last week, you know, some nice sunny days, but cool weather. So, also Susie and I had a chance to go out yesterday to visit Oscar the Bird King, new statue out at Point Robinson Park. And we were blessed because there were only like a dozen cars in the parking lot. And even at one point in time, there was nobody but the two of us admiring Oscar. So, things have quieted down in the Oscar observation ranks. So if you haven't gone out yet to Point Robinson to check out the Bird King, it's phenomenal. And I'm looking forward to the time when all of those birdhouses out there are full of birds. We'll see if that happens.
Yeah. Maybe at that point it was the three of you admiring each other.
Exactly.
Oscar can really feel alive sometimes.
Boy, isn't that the truth? Those eyes following you? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing.
But smiling. They're smiling eyes.
Yes, they are.
It truly is. Well, let's see. Let's talk about December 19th. Puts us 12 days before the end of the year, 6 days before Christmas, 4 days following Hanukkah 2023. And in 372 days, we will have the first day of Hanukkah and Christmas 2024. So the calendars align magically between those who celebrate the Christmas holiday and those who celebrate Hanukkah. Today is also, by the way, Oatmeal Muffin Day and National Hard Candy Day, just in case we needed to know that. But the other things of interest are, in 1998, on this day, President Bill Clinton was impeached. Also, in 2012, Park Jin-hee, who is the first female elected president of South Korea, was removed from office in 2017. Park was the first female elected president of South Korea in 2012, unfortunately removed from office in 2017 through an impeachment process and pardoned in 2021. So impeachment does seem to be sort of a par for the course for the day today. Getting back to the theme and the holiday season, in 1843, Charles Dickens published A Christmas Carol.
There you go.
That's a historic review. Anybody forecasting any future, any current events that may become historic?
Well, there might be a lawsuit or two that results in historic events.
Yeah.
There might. Well, we'll get to that, actually. So, thanks for bringing that up. Okay. Sometimes we do try to predict history here, and fortunately, Bruce can help keep us on the right course, given his expertise. But why don't we jump into our discussion with our guest, Mariel Thrasingham. Thank you for joining us today again, Mariel. I'm sure many Islanders are familiar with your recent service to the community as a member of the school board, but may not be as aware of your work with Front and Centered, nor of your motivation to select Vashon as your family home. So why don't you, if you could please let our listeners know how you arrived at a decision to join us here on the island.
Sure. My family and I moved to Vashon in March 2020. My first son was a week old. We moved on a Monday. We'd been living in North Seattle for almost a year. Matt actually had come from the East Coast, from the D.C. area. who hadn't been in the region that long. We'd been looking for a place to live that felt more permanent, and Vashon just kept coming up. We'd look in other parts of King County. My husband had to commute into Seattle. We wanted a place for a garden for our three dogs, and somehow we just kept getting drawn to Vashon. I'm like, that's commutable, right? There's ferries, sound manageable. People do it. So that was the basis for just finally settling on it. Hearing enough good things, and we knew two people. We knew two people on the island. So a lot of it was kind of hearsay from folks who knew of Vashon or had visited, or just knew it was a special kind of place. But we liked it when we came and looked at spots. And we moved on a Monday, and that Friday the governor declared that it was a pandemic and everyone needs to start staying at home.
Gosh.
And then we really were in the test of how does this community work for us? We're also trying to figure out how to be parents to a newborn. So it was a lot of newness in a short time, new home, community, world situation. But a lot of other people were going through the world situation with us, so it actually made us feel that much more connected rather than isolated. And it felt really great to be here in that time.
So did your husband stick around? Did he have to commute still then? Or
no.
Oh, that worked out.
Stay home too.
Yeah, wow.
After the leave and for at least a year and a half longer.
Wow, excellent.
Nice. Your story is not alone. I have an acquaintance who I recently met who tells a very similar story, arriving to Vashon right when COVID came along. So many challenges to address there. I'd also know that MRL Front and Centered has an honorable and challenging goal of a just transition to a future where our communities and the earth are healed and thriving, our people have dignified work, and our government values, respects, and represents us. In general, what are the policy issues and priorities that Front and Center focuses on?
I'm going to give a little intro to Front and Centered in case folks aren't familiar. We're not one of the, the larger environmental or social justice organizations. We don't have a national presence. We're a statewide coalition made up of over 80 now organizations led by and serving Black, Brown, Indigenous, and other community of color led, serving these communities and led by folks in these communities. And we're growing. Our membership is growing. But as a coalition, we're focused on kind of climate and environmental justice in Washington. So it really is about getting climate and environmental justice into Washington policy. We know in the state there's a lot of attention and a decent amount of funds that are going towards climate action. Like, let's take climate action. Let's work on conservation. We need to support a future. We need to work towards a future where people are safe and comfortable, where we can sustain well-being, and not just people, like our natural environment too, wildlife. And that future is looking pretty far off with a lot of the dire predictions, but also the current experiences, the very real happening right now. Experiences of folks with extreme weather events and wildfire smoke, habitat loss, and the impacts on the supply chain and all of that. So Front and Centered fits into that and grew out of a need to really center justice in the actions that are being taken or that are being proposed to urgently address kind of the climate crisis. And that centering of justice is really about making sure that the human experience and communities in particular who have disparately been impacted because they're at the front lines of the crisis, like a lot of farm workers and people who work outdoors under increasingly extreme kind of conditions, and folks who live in the communities where a lot of development, especially high polluting kind of development, is cited. Or is proposed for being cited, or people who depend on salmon and food sources that are impacted by kind of changes to the environment from human choices on how we set up our industry, our industrial agriculture, and all that. So folks at the front lines, low income communities, and communities of color who are kind of disparately impacted are the most harmed from what's happening with our climate and environmental degradation, and with a lot of decisions, including what's happening to our climate, that are squarely kind of coming from structural racism, from systems for how our economy works and how our government structure works. I will speak also more to kind of specific policies, but I really wanted to set up for why what front end centered is and why we are. And my role as clean energy policy lead is about focusing specifically on kind of climate justice outcomes in energy policy. So reducing carbon emissions from the electricity sector, transitioning off of high carbon emitting kind of energy sources like natural gas, and making sure that access to energy as a critical resource becomes a right, and at least is supported in terms of sufficient assistance and opening accessibility to a lot of programs, weatherization, kind of clean energy, solar panels, heat pumps. And we insert in a lot of other policy areas, but it's about environmental and climate policy at the center of what Washington at the state level is trying to do, and supporting our coalition members at their local level.
It looks like Truman might have.
Yeah, I have to tell you, what you're saying is really hits home with me. Several years ago, actually quite a few years ago, I visited Shishmaref, which is a little fishing village on the coast up in Alaska, and it is being washed away by the tide, by the change in sea level, and they are losing buildings as we speak because of the environmental impact. And so those folks are really impacted by what's happening today. And so I really feel for what you're saying. Anyway.
It's an environmental issue and a justice issue.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
But sometimes our policymakers can kind of lose sight of the justice issue. And so we're there to really kind of put it forward and remember about human impacts, and particularly about how those who are most impacted are most in line for harm, need to be supported and protected, and have a voice that influences policy. Because otherwise, if it's just about kind of what are the scientific inputs we can do, or what are the technical inputs that will kind of raise the numbers, like more heat pumps, kind of less natural gas pipelines, like that is not an outcome that's enough for a just society. It really needs to be about the structural changes that will embed accountability so that the people are really leading the project.
So I'm curious, Mario, there must be movements like Front and Centered across the entire country and across the entire globe. You've clearly spent time around the world on this issue. Where do you draw inspiration today for the work you're doing, and where do you see examples of progress? Are we leading progress here in the Northwest? Are there other communities who are making great strides? Just curious how you see that big picture of where enthusiasm is drawn for the work that you're doing.
Just to clarify, I have not done this work around the world per se.
Okay.
I left law school and immediately went into kind of international development with a focus on democracy and governance. So it really was about justice sector institutions working in different countries, largely in Myanmar. I lived in Myanmar for 3 years. I worked in Afghanistan on and off for several years. And all of that was about kind of rule of law. How do you ensure there's judicial independence and effective electoral systems? And are the law schools kind of working, the court systems? How about informal and traditional justice? How does that integrate with kind of more formal, kind of the more formal systems and all of that? And that is hard. It's really hard. It's really hard to see results because you need to change people's hearts and minds. Like, trust in institutions so low in many of these countries, in many fragile states. And without trust, then what's the basis? What can actually support, what can be at the foundation of those as forms of governance and effective governance? And so it's like generations in the making to get to see progress there, as opposed to a 3 to 5 year USAID funded kind of contract that organizations I worked for had. But I shifted a bit towards environmental after I came back to the U.S. and the opportunity to move from the D.C. area to Seattle came up. And okay. The IPCC report came out, and it was getting a lot of attention. And that was pretty new to me. I don't have a background in environmental science or environmental law, but my background in human rights and in and particularly around informal justice systems and how people are kind of served by and participate in them really fit in cleanly into this environmental and climate justice space. And so that is kind of what that's what I bring forward, because I wanted to be a part of the effort, be a part of the action, and wanted to bring existing skills and knowledge that I had to bear. And also what I've seen and experienced as, you know, as a woman of color. I'm Afro-Panamanian by family background. I've lived in the heart of several metropolises in the city and around the world, and on the margins as well. And I've seen a lot. I've seen a lot. I'm a 30-something person, but I've seen some things. And I especially have had a lot of connections with those who have really had deep lived experience in kind of injustices that have been perpetuated by certain economic systems, certain choices, colonialism, all of it. And so being able to tie together those stories, that I just felt like I can do that, and I can bring that to this. And so with a focus on Washington State, it has been both kind of drawing from what I already had and learning a lot that felt new. And actually, in the same way that I'm joining the school board on Vashon, was me wanting to kind of be a part of serving the community that I felt had served us and welcomed us really, really, really well. But I came without having lived here that long, without having gone to school in the district, without having ever worked in the district, not having kids in the district. So it's really about having a kind of an outsider to insider perspective, and bringing kind of new and fresh eyes. And I like to think that has helped me also reflect on what progress means for kind of Washington State policy. And there are absolutely like avenues for progress in what has been kind of successful in some of the work that Front and Centered has been a part of in centering environmental justice through the Healthy Environment for All Act, and what we're kind of continuing to push for that I'll speak to later in the legislative session. People are using the term environmental and climate justice, and it is appearing, like that term is appearing in law, talking about vulnerable communities, marginalized, overburdened, hard to reach, highly impacted and underserved communities, defining them and defining kind of how to prioritize and distribute benefits to them. Like this is pretty new. An environmental justice community who we dedicate a minimum allocation of kind of budgetary and related benefits to. Like it's not how policy happened before, and it's happening more and more now. And I think that's really kind of at the core of what is good and what is part of the a more effective kind of progressive push for in Washington. And then there are areas that are that's still concerning, that's still kind of problematic, and I'm sure you've discussed, and I'm sure you're very familiar, Kevin.
Mm-hmm. And I think Craig had some questions about where that conversation was
going. Well, actually, you answered a lot of the questions I had. We were wondering how your background informed the job that you have today. And you kind of told us that. I do want to digress a little bit. As a fellow lawyer, I'm curious where you went to law school.
Columbia Law School, New York.
I think some of us have heard of Columbia.
a little bit.
Oftentimes considered either one, two, or three in terms of rankings of law schools in the United States. I'm just a pitiful UC Berkeley.
I think I've heard of that one, though.
Yeah, that's right. And I have to say, I think it has to do with my mother. She was a student of dialogue. And names. And you have a very interesting last name. How do you pronounce your last name?
Thracingham.
Thracingham. Is that She would say, you know, she'd tell you what part of the country that you know, where that came from. Is that British, Great Britain, or is that, where is that?
Well, my husband is Sri Lankan. He's a Tamil Sri Lankan, and that's his family name, and I picked it up with marriage.
Okay, I missed it by about 10,000 miles.
Where in the country that came from? And I was like, well, I don't think she'd pick this one up.
No.
Wow.
What's your maiden name?
Fernandez.
Ah, Fernandez.
Okay, yeah, just want to put it on this. Yeah. I just tacked the racing ham to the end.
Yes. Wow. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. And I know there's a lot of history in that name too that I can't speak to as well. But
okay,
it's only five syllables. So you got anyone can handle it. Right? You should see how people pause when they see it and they have to introduce me.
Yes.
But we haven't done a pronunciation check beforehand.
That. I looked at it when went. Okay,
but just read it like it's written. It is pretty straightforward.
That's funny.
A lot of letters though.
I'm going to turn the baton over to Bruce. If that's okay.
Absolutely.
Bruce is muted again.
Necessary. I've got to pay attention here. Let me find where I am. You know, we all know the legislative process is a bit like making sausage. You know, the end result is very pleasant, but the process is messy. Washington legislative session starts in 20 days. So what does front and center want to accomplish? And how are you going to accomplish it in the Washington legislature?
We have, we've already put out our legislative agenda. I think that came out last week. So I invite everyone to go to frontandcenter.org if they want to check it out, or just kind of Google Front and Center Leg Agenda. And yeah, I can go through some of what our priorities are happily. But just a note on how you started with the sausage analogy. Not everyone's going to love the sausage and result either. We've definitely, like, just being in the midst of this, the battles kind of feel messy, and then sometimes the outcome isn't what we want to see either. We're there both promoting legislation that we co-drafted or that we support or that our member org support, and we're there pushing back and opposing. And I don't know if it's come up much around the Climate Commitment Act that passed couple years ago, and we were not a pro on the pro side of that. But at this point, as it's kind of facing potential repeal, we are not on the pro side of that process either. And there's definitely kind of lots of room for opportunity and room for kind of concern about what could be with how the CCA kind of plays out in terms of what we are working on, what we really want to get through. I think our top priority is the Cumulative Risk Burden Reduction Act, which I'm not sure if it's dropped yet, but the lead legislator is Rep. Charlotte Mena from the 29th District, kind of, which is kind of Tacoma area. And it's called the CURB Bill, and it's explicitly about reducing the impacts of harmful pollution in communities at the point of new or kind of upgrading development that is being proposed through the Department of Ecology. So the Department of Ecology has to approve kind of permitting for new development or adding to kind of existing facilities and development. And a lot of these proposals are for, you know, seemingly environmentally friendly projects or projects that are part of our potential clean energy future. That can contribute to low emissions energy kind of so production and processes. So it's not all, or it's not any, for the most part, about like perpetuating industries that we're really concerned about, but it's how they are inputted. It's how they're set up, and if they're not set up with regard to the immediate impacts on the people who live like near where they're sited. And those being primarily kind of pollution-related, air and water quality, then they're bad projects. They're like either they're poorly designed or they're poorly conceived, and they're often not conceived with actual, authentic, and meaningful consultation with communities. So this bill is about making that more mandatory and really kind of requiring the department to consider those impacts and to know them. Like there needs to be tracking for like better tracking for air, for kind of how air quality is affected by the pollution from some of these facilities. And that is kind of, that needs to factor into whether or not those permits are approved. And when those facilities are being sited in and near communities that are designated highly impacted, because, you know, community can mean many things, and there's lots of places, and there's certainly lots of rural places where populations are less dense, like our island. But when those communities are assessed as being highly impacted, which means of all the communities in a collection, they rank at the top for experiencing adverse health impacts at a higher rate, including resulting from like respiratory ailments resulting from air pollution, and other kind of adverse kind of conditions and high risk characteristics, then those communities need to be privileged, which means it's a high impact, it's highly known, highly impacted community. And the ecology knows that. So the ecology needs to give them more points in terms of like whether or not they're impacted and whether to permit or not the project.
Mm-hmm. You know, it seems particularly relevant that somebody from Tacoma would be introducing that bill, Mario.
Not a big impact.
Things going okay in the studio?
Yeah, no problem.
We're having fun.
No problem.
Okay, very good. I was just going to say, Marielle, it seems very appropriate that a representative from Tacoma would introduce that legislation,
given some
development on the waterfront there and some of the concerns that residents of Tacoma have expressed. And, of course, the wind blows normally towards Vashon from there, so can impact our community as well.
Well, I find it interesting that, I mean, the Department of Ecology is going to look at the environment as a whole, but you folks are specifically saying, look at this neighborhood or look at this group of people and how it affects them. I think that's really significant. I mean, it's different than what they normally do, right? I mean, what the Department of Ecology does. So I think that's great that you can make it for a specific community so they look at that. I find that very fascinating. I had no idea you were doing that.
I'll encourage everyone to support the bill as it kind of comes out and hopefully makes its way through this short session. And we're hopeful that we can get this through or at least bring it back next year in a big way.
Follow up with a question.
It
seems to me that you're talking about connecting the dots in terms of, you know, communities that are impacted, in terms of government policy, in terms of specific kinds of outcomes, relating that to systematic racism, relating it to privileged and unprivileged, underprivileged communities, however you want to define those kind of things. And you can do that through policy and through legislation. How do you get the general public to sort of grasp that? I mean, that seems to me the sort of hurdle you're confronting.
It is. It's in the stories. Like people's experiences are. We want to put the experiences of those, especially who have and are in line for having the most harm. And we want to put those out there. And real human stories, that actually resonates more with the general public than a lot of numbers that kind of more come through from the scientific perspective or kind of technical analyses from directly from policy think tanks. And so it's that's part of it, definitely working kind of with the media. And our coalition is community-based organizations. They are people. They're kind of working with people on direct services, on raising awareness, on education. It's definitely a lot of a communications kind of project. But it's almost one that takes care of itself just because these kind of real stories are what resonates. They're what sit. So what we do, we do our best to kind of pull narratives together and to kind of put those forward as not just a part of, but really central to kind of how policy is driven alongside data as well, what kind of comes through those other more technical channels, because otherwise it's just something that sits on paper. But when you really think of these as like the wording of the bills. This is living matter. It really is about people's lives.
It's the personal impact, the impact that it has on the individuals that mm-hmm. you're focusing on, I think, is what's important. And that's how you get people's attention, I think. Like right. you said, with stories.
And, I mean, there are a lot of people who aren't experiencing them or don't see themselves experiencing them right. or don't see themselves as that community.
Impacted by it. Yeah.
But they can care. Yeah, they should. Sure. So that's part of, like, we call that out all the time.
Really glad you mentioned that. Yes, it helps us to see through eyes that are not our own sometimes about the state of our communities. I will say that speaking of our communities locally here, it's this Thursday, 7 p.m., December 21st, Land Trust or on Zoom, the council will vote on the 2024 Vashon Mori Environment and Climate Agenda motions, where speaking of community, three community leaders who are involved with environmental groups have identified their 2024 legislative goals and objectives. So show up at the council meeting and listen to those goals and objectives. And if you support them, hope you'll vote yes to support the motions. Marielle, I don't know if there's any other comments you'd like to make on Front and Center's 2024 priorities.
I'll just run through what we list as our priorities. A lot of it's tracking the money. So part of the Climate Commitment Act account, the CCA accounts, where high fossil fuel using industries were paying into those accounts. I think it's $1 billion, almost $1 billion that the state has for environmental projects and programs. And that funding is going to be tapped into for all sorts of kind of existing, like scaling up existing programming and new programming. And so Front and Centered is making sure that, or kind of we'll definitely be leading on making sure that funding is appropriately used and allocated. And our kind of metric for appropriateness is there's a minimum, I think, of 40% is benefiting overburdened communities and vulnerable populations. And so really holding it to kind of the government agencies and kind of these projects that are slotted in the budget for how to use this money. What percentage is going where? How are folks being served? How is their prioritization for these programs? How are certain kind of communities being selected and actually kind of receiving those benefits? So a lot around targeting and prioritization is where we're looking. And so it's holding government side accountable to appropriate allocation of these monies. And that funding it's CCA funding and federal funding, like there's other sources. And we just want to make sure those processes are as set up as best as they can be for a just distribution and for the outcomes that will best serve equity, which is really kind of raising up and serving the interests of those least served and most historically harmed. And then on the energy side, which I'm focused on, although this session I'll probably step back a bit because I'm 8 months pregnant. And I just can't, okay. won't be able to do much once number three arrives on the scene for a little while. But there's some interesting moves on the energy side, including I think House Bill 1589, which we are, I think we're supporting now in how it is kind of coming about. And it's about transitioning off of gas, sort of a decarbonization push. So transitioning off of gas side for kind of space and water heating to all electric. To cleaner sources, and then some other bills I think will be floated with that same aim, and also energy navigator and ambassador programs to get them funded or passed to make it easier for people to access clean energy opportunities and more affordable kind of services to meet their home heating and health needs.
Okay, excellent. And I think that 1589, for example, would require Puget Sound Energy to transition their natural gas companies away from fossil fuels and towards a more sustainable electric appliances. Is that?
That's right.
Was my understanding of it? Okay, yeah, thanks for clarifying. Also, along the way, you mentioned a couple of things, the Climate Commitment Act, the CCA, that is the cap and invest program where polluters do pay for their pollution, and that monies then are used for programs that benefit the climate. And you also mentioned the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, is one of the early motivations you mentioned as you were considering this line of work. So if folks are not aware of the IPCC, they publish multiple reports about the state of the climate around the globe.
Thanks, Kevin.
You know, and I just recently heard, I don't know if it's a national level or if it's state, where they're looking at passing legislation that will require packagers to provide funding for the recycling of their particular packaging material. I think, boy, what an incredible thing that would be. I mean, rather than making everybody else pay for the recycling, they're making the product. They should contribute to the recycling of it. I think that's interesting.
We don't do much in terms of a lot of the zero waste. Although, right. Like, I'm personally quite passionate about it, right. And fully support that. All initiatives that kind of require manufacturer side, like the producers, to be responsible for the materials through like cradle to grave, mm-hmm. Especially around financial responsibility, is going to be really important, because otherwise it's always hanging over the individual households.
Absolutely.
We have to do sustainability. It's our project. And if it fails, it's because of us. And actually, there's a lot of structural, especially kind of in the capitalist system, yeah. At the private sector level, where I think it's pretty convoluted, and I totally support that.
So, and in the spirit of shameless self-promotion, that is one of the elements of the Vashon Murray Environment Climate agenda. So again, if you want to support those types of things, show up 7 p.m. Thursday. But Truman, I think you maybe had some questions.
Yeah, kind of get us back to the local level here. You mentioned something earlier about working with indigenous groups outside or those that are underserved, and talking about trying to establish trust in the system. And I think that's something that we have going, particularly at the national level, of individuals trying to sow distrust in the system. And I'm wondering, your work with the school board, is that a way to on the local level, for us to invest in trust in our system here on the school board? And do you have any aspirations for the new school board members going forward, usually with that in mind?
Well, I have to say, having voted through kind of our levy requests that will be coming up in February on the ballot, I invite everyone to continue to invest in the school district. Mm-hmm. And I think there's, it's a no-brainer. No, I mean, absolutely, there's kind of different dimensions, especially around increase on kind of the financial responsibility of a lot of kind of residents on the island for whom this can be burdensome. But the benefits to the district of having kind of safe and secure facilities for the youth and for those who kind of come from off-island, but are part of the heart of our district is... it's enormous. I learned so much about how the district works and about governance. I've been on so many advisory boards and committees and councils, but a real governance role like this was pretty new to me. I think I had one goal going in, and it is not a goal that I would say that I've totally contributed to, or even, I don't know if I maybe partially contributed to it, but it was like, I came in, through an appointment, a role that someone had to step back early. So there were only a couple years left in that seat for that director. I was invited by a friend. I thought, okay, I want to be a part of this community. Let me just try and see. and basically unopposed, like one other person was interested but then stepped back, and then it was just me. And I thought, okay, I think more people... I would love it if more people wanted to do this, if more people wanted to be a part of governance and to have kind of their voice and also their power kind of concentrated so that the decisions they make can influence in a beneficial way the students and the community at large. And what do you know? We had 8 people who submitted their names for the four, but the open seats that came up on the board, and there were competitive races.
That's great.
And we welcomed the new board. They had their first meeting last Thursday, which I'm very excited about that. I wasn't going to continue. I already had one kid during my tenure, and
Get a second one.
I've got to step back a bit and let others lead. But I think there's always going to be, because it's dynamic, it's a dynamic process with changing leadership, it's a dynamic process with changing situations, with really unexpected incidents that come up, and some things that are expected but are still hard, and it's really kind of hard to plan how what the response will look like. I mean, I think the work of trust is a big part of what the district has been and should kind of continue to focus on. But in no means should in any of these places, whether it's whether it's a village in kind of a country that has experienced a recent lapse in democracy, like Myanmar, or whether it's a kind of a school district where there has been like significant ripples in how folks kind of trust the district or the system based on kind of decisions around personnel and a lot of kind of concerning things around that. It has to be earned. Mm-hmm. And so you can't just buy in. You can't just tell people, like, trust the system. It will meet you there.
You got to
trust
it.
What could be.
That's right.
And demand accountability.
There you go.
Like, and in demanding and showing up and raising your voice and participating, you're actually building trust. So almost in challenging and expressing distrust, there's a lot of kind of opportunity to create and to contribute to an improvement. And I think actually this school district is great. And so what has come out of the board that I served on, and definitely what's coming with the current board, I'm feeling very positive about, and look forward to my children kind of being a part of the district. But absolutely. The project of trust is one that is active, and you need to be proactive if you want to benefit from it and also demand it.
All right. Sounds like Bruce may have a follow-up question.
I can jump in. It's not really follow-up, but it is in a way. It's sort of like, I'd like to touch into your experience with working with the rule of law in places where there was not much of a rule of law, or the rule of law has been overridden, or you're struggling to develop a concept of the rule of law. How do you see what's going on right now in the United States, where I see the rule of law being under serious attack? You know, how do you respond to that from your experience?
Just an easy question.
Yes. I'd love this to be part of the open conversation. What is everyone else also kind of seeing? There's a lot that's concerning. Kind of that's been coming up, judicial sector side, and laws that are being passed that really are so blatantly oppressive and suppressing freedoms. That really kind of should be a part of how kind of we all are living and defending, but they're gaining like a rapid hold in a lot of parts of the country. And part of my response is like shaking my head. How is this happening? Because a couple of the countries I've worked the most in, Myanmar and Afghanistan, those have not progressed since I've worked there. I'm not saying it's my fault, but things happened and they've not progressed in really significant ways. That does not mean it is inevitable that everything is on a backwards trend. And in this country, as long as we have and can kind of continue to exercise our rights in of protest, and our rights in kind of showing up and putting ourselves forward to like in roles of leadership, school board level, representative level,
airports,
water districts, park district,
airport
whatever.
So.
Yes, thanks, Truman.
No, but you're right.
Lead the way.
Yeah, you're right. Though it is
club presidents.
There you go.
It is. I remain optimistic, and that's why I'm having a third child. I call him climate optimism because the world can things can get better. I hope.
Yeah. Well, I do want to mention, of course, that folks who do want to find out more about the work of the organization you're working for, it's frontendcentered.org, and you can find also Legislative Agenda at that website. And I don't know, Marielle, if you wanted to say anything more about how people can connect with the work you're doing, but also maybe if not that, then we do tend to shift at this time to current events. I'm just curious if you might also want to comment on, you know, what kind of headlines are catching your attention these days that we might want to discuss briefly while we have a few minutes left.
Well, on Front and Centered, you know, check out the website, sign up for kind of email updates and alerts, and if anything really speaks to you, show up by signing on, reaching out to your representatives. I think we have a briefing where we'll be discussing our agenda more in depth on the 4th, and that should be open to public briefing, 4th of January. Hopefully that info is already up and accessible.
Awesome.
Virtual event. And headlines, there is a lot happening.
There's so much to choose from.
Yeah. And I'm sure kind of you've listed a few in your suggested script as well. So I'm not sure if there was something kind of you wanted to focus on. Local news, it sounds like things are going.
I was just curious if something in particular might be, you know, on top of mind for you. But we do have some topics that we can dive into. I will say that the Seattle City Council unanimously approved a new building performance standards policy. And we're talking about environmental and justice. This is where Seattle buildings now must come into compliance with some energy efficiency standards, which means they'll largely be transitioning to more efficient ways to heat water and space in those buildings. So that's viewed as a big success. But in the few minutes we have left, I'll just say $148 million in assessed penalty. Wow. Bruce, what will now become the legacy of America's mayor?
Well, American.
Or is it damage beyond repair already?
I think so. Well, and there's lots of political characters in the past who have damaged themselves in much of the way that Giuliani has. And it's sort of, you just have to wonder what's going on in his head at this point. You know, has he totally lost it? But yeah, I mean, I think that he's confronting right now, and I hope a number of those folks that were involved in the January 6th sort of attack, history is not going to judge them kindly, I don't think.
Well, you know, I mean, what gets me is that Trump comes out after the defamation or the abuse thing and then says exactly the same thing. Giuliani did the same thing. He comes up with, he's found guilty of defamation, and he comes right out after the court and says, yeah, everything I said is true. And so they're suing him again. It's like, wow.
Well, and we have two people here from the legal profession. I'm curious, Craig and Marielle, if you want to comment, you know, do these things have a deterrent effect, even though maybe Mayor Giuliani is not adhering to the penalties? Generally, is it a good idea to go down this path?
I would hope so. I mean, when somebody gets hit with a multi-million dollar judgment that the plaintiffs have, you know, in most jurisdictions up to 20 years in which to collect on, that's painful. I'm hoping that there is a bit of a deterrent effect to those punitive damages that are being issued in large amounts.
I hope there is, but I don't see it from the behavior. I think people think the positive benefit of attacking and disparaging the others, the character of others, and their credibility is far more beneficial on some level. And unfortunately, I think those behaviors will continue.
Exactly. Yes. The last thing is join me tonight at 6 o'clock, or join Father Christmas at the theater at 6 o'clock for the 36th annual caroling that we're going to have there.
Wonderful. All right. Well, Marielle, a pleasure to have you here on board. For Marielle, Bruce, Craig, Truman, and me, thank you for joining the Briefly today. Next week is the Truman Show. Truman, I don't know if you want to comment on anything.
Yeah, just a quick thing. This is the 26th will be the day. It'll be a year in review. So we're going to be looking back over the last year and what things have occurred and what things we might look forward to in the next year. So we'll see you all next week.
The day after Christmas. See you then.
Indeed.
Bye now.